All right, 1 Kings chapter 20. We picked up about two-thirds of the way, I guess, through the chapter there. What happens prior to what we were reading is that there are two major battles that take place between the nations of Israel and Syria. Israel being led by Ahab, and as Derek read, Syria being led by Ben-Hadad. King Ahab is able to lead Israel to victory in both battles. So right toward the end of the second battle, and this is where we were reading, Ben-Hadad sends some servants to approach Ahab to see kind of where he stands at the end of this battle. Is he going to be a prisoner of war? Is he going to be executed? What's Ahab going to do with his nation? And it's really an offer of allegiance in verses 31 through 34. And Ahab runs with it. My brother, Ben-Hadad, no longer my enemy. I see that I have you defeated. I see you groveling before my feet. Bring Ben-Hadad to me. Here's a key. Without inquiring for the word of the Lord, which is a reference or a phrase used in chapter 22 and verse 5, and it's used regularly of kings and prophets, well, Ahab leaves it out of the process. So without inquiring for that word, Ahab enters into a covenant with this heathen nation. Ahab has ignored the fact that God is the ruler of Israel, that God makes the decisions. As that chapter progressed, as the reading progressed, a prophet disguises himself, and a lot like Nathan did with David, this prophet offers Ahab just enough rope to hang himself. Tells him a story. King, during the battle, I was offered a tremendous responsibility. I was given the privilege of guarding another man's prisoner. Now, when this guy went to leave, he warned me, "You guard this man. If for any reason when I come back he is missing, your life for his, or else you will pay a talent of silver." Now, King, while I was busy here and there, he was gone. Ahab's response is quick. It's venomous. It's very Ahab-like. It's very telling. In the words of Guns N' Roses, he looks at that servant and says, "Welcome to the jungle. You're going to die." Ante up, dude. A life for a life. You pronounced your own judgment. The prophet removes his disguise, and you can almost see Ahab's mouth drop open in that comical O when he recognizes him. "Oh my. I have messed up. I have just sealed my fate with my big mouth." Remember David's reaction to Nathan when the neighbor's lamb had been taken? Man deserves to die. Before Ahab gets back in his chariot, starts home. Before he has to deal with the worries and the depression, the prophet makes sure that he got the point of the story. The prophet makes sure that he got the point of his own judgment. You are the man in the story. You removed your hand from the neck of the man God had marked for destruction. You spared him. you made an alliance with him, and so we're going to go back to King, back to Guns N' Roses. Welcome to the jungle, King. You're going to die. So Ahab goes home, terribly tore up about it. Go back to the story, and I want you to focus on the excuse, even though it's just a story told by the prophet. I want you to focus on the excuse used by the servant. And we're going to connect it first to Ahab. While your servant was busy here and there, I looked up and the prisoner was gone. I got distracted. I quit paying attention to what I was supposed to be paying attention to. Is the servant in the story wicked and just lets the man go? No, not at all. Does he claim to be unequipped for the task at hand? No, he accepted the responsibility as if he could carry it out. Did someone else higher up come and give him a more important job to do? No, no, and no. He simply was too busy to be bothered with watching the prisoner. So now, the connection. Here's Ahab. We said that's the man in the story. From a political standpoint, Ahab has not done anything wrong. The alliance is strategic. He's not the first king to make an alliance. He will not be the last, even within Israel and Judah's histories. He can expand his kingdom. And hey, if you're going to go get a kingdom to be on your side, Syria is not a bad one. They're strong. They're militaristic. They have land. They have land that belonged to you and their own land. But here's the problem. Ahab is so busy being king, being political, being strategic, he forgets his primary responsibility as what? A king of God's people. And that is, all the way back to our purpose, back in January, fear God and keep His commandments. And I made that singular on purpose because they go hand in hand. You're not going to separate the two. Ben-Hadad had been marked for death. Remember the story of King Saul? All the way back with what he was supposed to offer before the Lord. The end of a battle. But Ahab, so busy being king, so worried about alliances, so worried about making himself look good, forgot to check with God. That is so, it's just so human. It's so us. It's not that we're always evil. It's not that someone comes along and gives us something more important to do. It's just that we're so distracted. We're so busy doing everything. We walk into the kitchen to get a glass of milk, but we see that the dog needs water. So we take the dog's water bowl to the sink to wash it and realize that the sink's full of dishes that need to go in the dishwasher. So we're going to clean out the sink to fill up the water bowl, but we realize the dishwasher's full. So we have to stop and unload the dishwasher. Then we load the dishwasher. Then we water the dog. Then we walk back to the other end of the house without a glass of milk. Remember I did that one not too long ago, squirrel? We're constantly chasing some type of tangent. This is where our title, who remembers who Professor Hinkle is? What about Frosty the Snowman? Busy, busy, busy. That's us. Constantly living in a state of distraction. Where we're looking at our phones, or we're checking this and that and the other, even while we're not even looking at our phones, but mentally it's there. or Snoopy pops up, and Sue Harris has absolutely no idea what I'm talking about at this point. Banana. That's humanity. And sadly, because it's humanity, make this connection, the church is made up of humanity. Therefore, the distraction that comes with us being us affects our Christianity. Man, we're rocking along. Maybe we're accomplishing super mega things in our physical lives. Work's going great. Home's going great. The garden's going great. We're rocking along in our spiritual lives. And suddenly Satan says, hey, look, an armadillo. And our eyes go to the ditch. And the car goes to the ditch. Our lives are in the ditch. Because all it has to take is one flashing light, one armadillo, one squirrel, one frog passing by. Whatever. A couple of examples for you. Luke chapter 9 and verse 46. Two different times. It's actually going to pop up on the slide in a second, but I'm going to go ahead and give you a heads up. Two different times in the book of Luke, he is going to address the fact that the disciples get distracted by the question, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Now then, that alone is disturbing, that these guys are going to argue that point. What is more disturbing, and what you may not have ever noticed, is the context of both of those events. Luke chapter 9, verse 46. Argument arose among them as to which of them might be the greatest. Now then, there's my phrase. 1,000 times a year. Context, context, context. Who knows the context of this statement? Peter has just confessed him to be the Christ. This is that context where Jesus says, who do men say that I am? Who do you say? You're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God. He then goes on, said, hey, guys, listen to me. You want to follow me? You're going to be cross bearers. Does that sound like the crown wearers they're worried about being? No, two different things. Then those big three, Peter, James, and John, have just seen the transfiguration. That's my son. Listen to him. They've just watched him cast out a demon that they cannot do anything about. They've just been humbled right there before him. And they're going to be distracted by who is the greatest in the kingdom? Focus. The context makes that question even more serious and dumbfounding. Said Luke records two different conversations. The second is in chapter 22. You might get this context. Within seconds, watch Luke chapter 22 unfold. Within seconds of him instituting the Lord's Supper. And when you add John's account to this, he did what? He washed their feet. What I just did, I'm setting you an example that you should do the same thing. So you're going to take off the robe and you're going to put on the towel and you're going to get before each other and you're going to serve. They're arguing about who's the greatest. Context. We get so busy. Oh, this is my world. I'm the center of the universe. We get so busy with me things. We get so busy with my hardships and how awful my life is and all the terrible things that I'm going through. We get so busy with what I want, what I need, what I think, what I feel, what I expect, what I have a right to. Satan gets us all tied up in knots. We get so busy with hobbies and jobs and errands and 10,000 other things. We look like a cat chasing a light. And what's the problem with that? We find it hilarious. We run it up the wall. We run it into the couch. What's the problem with the cat chasing the light? He's not going to catch it. And then we become the one that's distracted by the light. And we fall on the floor like a toddler and we still can't catch the light. Chasing. And it's because we're chasing the wrong things. Listen to me. What did I say about Ahab? I said from a political, earthly standpoint, an alliance with a strong nation is a good thing. It's bad because of the spiritual side. A lot of times the things we are chasing are not bad. It's not bad to chase a promotion at work. It's not bad to chase a better job. It's not bad to have a hobby. It's not bad to have our kids involved. Until we become so busy with them that they pull us off track till they come between us and God. And Satan makes us look silly. But it is no laughing matter to God. It's not the next Facebook video for God. It's not the next gif of us chasing Satan's lights and funny. It's soul costing. Now then, I said this is part of the formula. So I have to tie this to making this your year. We've talked about purpose. We've talked about priority. We've talked about passion. We talked about a plan. Last week we talked about being a pupil of the Master, sitting at the feet of Jesus and walking beside Him so that we become Christians. We become the little Christs. We become the possession of the Christ. So the next word today, practice. And I don't mean practice makes perfect. I mean put it into practice. It's one of those words that we have to define by its context. 7 lessons so far, counting our introduction. 4 months into the year that we're supposed to be conquering, 4 months plus, it's May. How many? I don't want you to raise your hands. I'm not here to embarrass anybody this morning. Sometimes I do put you on the spot. You're going to raise your spiritual hand in your head. How many have found their purpose this year? How many have made it his or her priority? It's at the top of the list. Who has a heart of passion for that purpose? Who's even made a plan? Who's taken up the walk with the Christ to learn how to do it? And how many others have been so busy here and there that these things keep getting pushed aside? How many of us are 4 months plus into the year and we haven't made a single stride towards improving or conquering this year or striving towards a purpose? Let me give you an example. The home. Too many of us are too busy with jobs and hobbies and things like that to fulfill our roles in the home. Homes are being torn apart by mommies and daddies having hobbies, having occupations, having activities, having busy work. Can a father be a father that God has described if all his time is spent at work or at play or somewhere else? Can a mom keep the home and nurture her children if her time is spent online or with her friends or volunteering somewhere else? Can a child be reared in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord if he's constantly being taxied to the next practice or game? Can a husband love his wife like Christ loved the church? Can a wife respect and honor her husband if they are so tied up with everything else and everyone else that they're tied up in knots? The answer is no. We know that. We're not ignorant. So can my purpose really be to fear God and keep His commandments if I'm so busy with everything else that I'm too busy to worship, that I'm too busy to pray, that I'm too busy to study, that I'm too busy to evangelize, that I'm too busy to serve, that I'm too busy to teach? Fill in the blank. At some point, here's where we are this morning. At some point, we have to quit talking about fixing a problem. We have to stop talking about starting a new ministry or fixing a sin in our life or starting a new habit or getting rid of whatever. We have to stop talking about things and make a plan and act on it. Put it into practice. Fred and Luke were friends, farmers on the edge of the same forest, lived in houses side by side. One day they woke up to find that someone had come through and cut down a lot of the trees in their forest. Fred's outraged. Fred goes storming to Luke's house. Can you believe what has happened? Who could have done this? Calmly, Luke responds, I have no idea. Well, I'm going to go do something about it. Are you coming with me? No thanks, said Luke. Aren't you going to do something? I will. So Fred storms off to town. He's in a rage. He begins telling everyone he meets about what has happened. Can you believe it? Dozens of trees cut down and hauled off overnight. And of course, you know, we do what we do. Villagers are sympathetic. They nod. But you know what the worst thing about it is, said Fred? Luke won't do anything about it. If he were as mad as me, he'd be here. He'd be telling as many people as possible. Well, Fred reaches everybody in town that he can reach. He goes back home. He goes back by Luke's house. I'm going to write a letter to the mayor. I'm going to complain to him. Do you want to help? No, thanks. Aren't you going to do something? I will, said Luke. Furious, Fred flies out the door, writes his letter to the mayor, goes to bed next morning, goes back to his house. No one answers the door. Luke's truck's there. He's got to be around. No one answers the door. So Fred begins to look around. He begins to walk out toward the barn to see if he's out there. Spots him at the edge of the clearing that had once been their forest. Incensed, Fred says, what are you doing? There are still people who've not heard about the trees. Luke looks up and calmly responds, I'm planting new trees. This is us. This is the busy, busy, busy. Tom's confused. And I don't know how it became Tom all of a sudden. When we started out, it was Fred. Fred's confused. Why? Because complaining about them won't bring them back. That's it. That is it, my friends, this morning. Complaining will not fix anything. Never has. I'm going to go a step farther. I want you, or further. I want you to watch this. Planning will not fix anything. Walking alongside the Master will not fix anything. And I'll give you an example of that in just a second. Finding a purpose will not fix anything. Having a passion will not fix anything. Having a priority will not fix anything if I never put anything into practice. You want the proof? Judas walked with the Master for 3+ years and never accomplished anything. We can talk about this all year long, 12 months. And at the end of the year, if we haven't done anything, we've wasted a year. At some point, I either have to burn the plow like Elisha and go for it. Go ask for that double portion of Elijah's spirit. Or I have to go back to plowing the field. At some point, I've got to let somebody else bury the dead and step out on faith and walk with Jesus. Or I've got to go to the funeral and then go home. And let Jesus walk out of my life. At some point, I either have to get out of the boat and walk on water, or I got to sit back down in the boat and hope the storm passes. Inaction is a decision. Inaction is, in fact, a fierce action, a stop action, where I make the decision, I'm not going to do anything. Jesus was not a man of inaction. When he's opening the book of Acts, Acts chapter 1 and verse 1, Luke says of his first account, so that's the Gospel of Luke, it was an account of all that Jesus began to do and to teach. Now then, all scriptures God breathed. That means Acts 1 and 1 is God-breathed. That means the order of words, do and teach. It's fascinating. Jesus stepped into the water to fulfill all righteousness when he was baptized. And the Father said, that's it. That's him. That's my son. And I'm well pleased with what I'm seeing. Jesus single-handedly turned the temple upside down. He confronted the hypocrisy of his day. He sent a horde of demons into a herd of pigs. He stopped a funeral procession in the middle of the road and touched a dead man. He walked resolutely toward the cross so that at his transfiguration, the Father again says, that's him. Eyes on him. That's my son. I'm well pleased with him. By the way, he said, let me add, you better listen to him too. He knows what he's talking about. He didn't just talk about it. He didn't just plan it. He didn't just put it on his calendar and let the date slip past. He did what he set out to do. I'm going to close with an illustration from our world. I'm going to give you my opinion on something, and I don't do that very often. And then I'm going to offer a challenge. Start the illustration. Joshua Chamberlain. History buffs, ring a bell. Student of theology, professor of rhetoric, not a soldier. And yet if you studied Gettysburg, you know his name. When duty called, he answered. He climbed to the ranks of colonel in the 20th Maine Volunteer Infantry. July 2nd, 1863, he and a dwindling regiment of 300 men were all that was left. They stood between the Confederates and the defeat at Gettysburg. 2:30, the 15th and the 47th Alabama Infantry Regiments charged. Chamberlain and his men held their ground. They charged again and again and again and again. 5 times, and at the end of the 5th charge, Chamberlain had 80 men. When they took inventory, not only had Chamberlain been knocked down by a bullet, He had 80 men with one cartridge each. Sensible thing at that point, let's surrender. Let's retreat. Let's live to fight another day. Look out, a little boy up in a tree says, the rebels are forming rank again. No reinforcements, one bullet each. The outnumbered 4,000 to 80. He climbs onto the stones at the barricade, dividing the two. Full view of the enemy, points his sword at the rebels and yells, charge. They fix bayonets. 80 men charge the enemy ranks. They catch them off guard. Perfect maneuver. Within 5 minutes, 80 soldiers have captured 4,000. And the Battle of Gettysburg is turned. Now then, here's the point. Historians will tell you, if they had not charged, the rebels would have taken the higher ground. If they had gained the higher ground, they would have won the Battle of Gettysburg. If the rebels had won the Battle of Gettysburg, they would have won the war. One man's conviction, one man's choice to do something, save the day, save the war, save the United States. Have you heard the poem, for the want of a nail, the shoe was lost? For the want of a shoe, the horse was lost? For the want of a horse, the rider was lost. For the want of a rider, the message was lost. For want of a message, the battle was lost. For want of the battle, the kingdom was lost. All for the want of a horseshoe nail. Here's the opinion part, and you can take it for what it's worth. But I believe Jesus is tired of hearing his children talk about all the good things we can do, should do, and will do. He wants us to do something. He wants us to be the nail, to be the shoe, to be the horse, to be the rider, to be something so that the message gets delivered, the battle is won, and the kingdom is saved. If we would just do something, he will do everything. Marty will recognize this because it's in the book he gave me. If we will do the small things like they are big things, he will do the big things like they are small things. And again, I don't think there's any small things in the kingdom, but simply put, if I'll do something, God will conquer the world through me. But we got to quit talking about it and do it. So here's the challenge. And it goes back to where we were earlier, and it begins with a question or two. Who has solidified his or her purpose? Who's made it a priority? Who's found the passion? Who's made a plan? Who started the walk with Jesus? Who's put it into practice? Who started a Bible study program at home so far? Not a devotional reading. We already talked about the difference. Who is spending 30 minutes to an hour every day digging into Scripture? Who's approached someone else with the gospel? How many active Bible studies are going on in this congregation right now with non-Christians? Don't look at me. Is that what you're saying? Who's improved his or her attendance, or who's fisting a bolt as soon as we say amen? Who's put on the towel of service and met somebody's need? Who's what? I mean, who's done something about what we've been talking about for 4 months? Do something. Here's the challenge. Do something toward the purpose this week. Lose the busy here and there and do what you're supposed to be doing. And by the end of this week, if you'll do that, God will have begun conquering your year for you and the world for Him. One horseshoe nail at a time. Starts at Calvary. The commitment starts at Calvary for those of us who are already children of God. We have to go back there and walk with the Master. If you're not a child of God, it starts with the forgiveness that comes through the blood of the Lamb. Jesus stepped into the waters of baptism, even though he did not need to be baptized, because he said, I'm going to do it to fulfill the righteousness of God. I'm going to set the example of exactly how you get right. If you haven't obeyed the gospel, if you haven't repented of your sins and confessed Him before the world, if you haven't made that statement of belief that He is the Christ, the Son of God, and then been immersed to be forgiven, start there. And then you can become the nail in the shoe on the horse with the rider with the message. So we stand and sing.